The Equifax data breach has made an estimated 140 million Americans vulnerable to identity theft. It's by far the most far-ranging breach of its kind, and its after effects are still sinking in. WalletHub consumer finance consultant Jill Gonzalez says we now live in a world where we are all vulnerable, a world she describes as the new normal. We spoke earlier this morning about the impact of the breach and the ways we can protect ourselves going forward.
This is definitely the largest and only breach affecting actual consumers' personal records, especially when it comes to some identifying information. So unlike a Target breach or a Home Depot breach where some records might be tied to credit card numbers, this is actual Social Security numbers, addresses, past employer, everything.
So this is qualitatively different than anything we've seen to date.
Exactly. This is going to be a little bit more expansive and go a little bit deeper.
Which means that a lot of people have to increase their financial literacy quotient in a hurry, I would think.
Yeah, I mean, just knowing what to do next and how to safeguard against this in the future, I think would help out a lot of people.
Well, I mean, what are immediate steps for somebody who says, okay, well, you know, I'd have dealt with them, so they probably have my records. What should I do now?
So that's the first kind of step here, is knowing that there's a good chance that you were affected. Basically, one in two consumers were affected by this breach. So presuming that that is including you is, I think, the first step.
Yeah.
Number two, signing up for some type of 24/7 credit monitoring. That way you'll find out immediately if someone has tried recently or is trying to open an account in your name. And that should be a free service. There's really no point in paying for anything like that in this day and age.
There are enough companies, including yours, that offer that, right?
Exactly. So I think one thing that Equifax is still doing wrong is kind of using this whole thing as a marketing plot to get people to sign up for maybe a free year of their credit monitoring service and then start charging them after that. There's not even a reason for that. You know, you could really get any type of free credit monitoring from WalletHub or many other third parties.
That might set some sort of record for corporate gall, you know, in the wake of what has just happened.
Congress has called for Equifax executives to really answer to this and say, hey, when did you know? Why didn't you tell us sooner? And who is going to get fired because of this?
Yeah, no kidding. So you have got 24/7 credit monitoring now, and so that means that, and that's the first thing that a credit thief would do is try to buy something or open an account pretending to be you, right?
So this, because it's different than, say, one of those big retailer breaches, people don't necessarily, the hackers don't necessarily have access to your actual credit cards, but they do have access to possibly your Social Security number, your address, your name, obviously, and other pieces of information that could allow them to open a new line of credit.
I see.
So that's really what you want to be keeping an eye out for. So you'll sign up for this credit monitoring. That way you can see if someone is opening an account in your name.
Right.
If that's the case, you can go ahead and nip that in the bud. Obviously tell lenders, tell your credit reporting agencies that that was not you. And then if you do see that any of this fraudulent information is appearing on your report, that's when you need to suppress it. So a lot of consumers might know about submitting a credit dispute, but a credit suppression or a credit block actually gets rid of negative information and makes sure that it can never reappear on your actual report. Now, you will have to take a couple extra steps. One is filing a police report. The other is getting an affidavit from the FTC, but two things that are well worth it to make sure this information doesn't creep back into your future.
Getting an affidavit from who? I'm sorry?
The FTC, the Federal Trade Commission.
Okay. Have we now taken care of the problem, at least for the immediate future?
Yes, absolutely. So suppressing any of that fraudulent information is definitely what you need to do. If you have seen that you've already been hacked and that someone has taken action on that, if you haven't yet but you have a good idea that you're been affected by this Equifax breach, then you might want to put a freeze on your credit reports. Definitely Equifax, maybe even Experian and TransUnion reports, so all three credit reporting agencies. If you freeze your reports rather than placing a fraud alert on them, it prevents anyone but you from accessing them, so it makes it impossible to take out a loan or line of credit.
Jill, I still find myself wondering, since it's relatively easier, given this information, for people to find you on the internet, how does the credit thief himself, how does he cover his tracks? You know, can't all this be traced backward to the person initiating the credit theft?
Well, right now, Equifax doesn't know who breached them, who hacked them. I mean, hackers now are so sophisticated that it takes a while to really track this. There's other breaches that we still don't know who are necessarily accountable for. So I wouldn't count on that, especially not in the near future. Unfortunately, this is our new normal. We're not living in a world where our data is secure. So you might as well, you know how to handle that in the future.
It would seem that the only way to be entirely safe is to withdraw all your data from any, you know, make it impossible to reach any of that.
Well, that's unfortunately not an issue, right? So Equifax, TransUnion, Experian, they have our data. It's not going anywhere. So how that will be handled in the future is certainly a question. Policy-wise, we don't see anything changing, at least in the immediate future. So it's really better to secure yourself. Make sure that you're monitoring your credit. Make sure that you've enabled two-factor authentication. That's also very important now. I'm sure a lot of people's where bank accounts, bill accounts are all tied to one central email, that email address is gold to whoever is hacking you. So make sure that whether it's a Gmail account, a Yahoo account, make sure that you have two-factor authentication set so that every time you log in, you get a text message with a code sent directly to your cell phone that only you have. That way you can input it in wherever you're trying to gain access to. Equifax was hacked. Your cell phone wasn't, so use that to your advantage.
Yeah. Two-factor authentication. Jill, the climate that you describe as the new normal strikes me as one in which right now the criminals have a bit of an upper hand. They seem to be constantly outrunning any kind of attempts to rein in online theft of this kind.
I mean, unfortunately, unless we see these things coming, and sometimes we do, I think we'll see if there was any hint that this was going to happen. But that's why you really have to take these proactive steps to make sure that you yourself are protected.
Jill Gonzalez is a consumer finance expert, a financial literacy advocate, and a spokesperson for Wallet Hub.
Support for Hawaii Public Radio comes from Tory Richard Limited, celebrating more than 60 years of design for the island lifestyle. Tory Richard is proud to support local community news, public affairs, and talk programming on HPR.
You count on us to be responsive to the news of the day, issues of concern to our community and to you, our listeners. We hear you. Starting September 18th, we'll be bringing back shows many of you have asked for, including On the Media on Mondays, Freakonomics on Tuesdays, and Left, Right, and Center on Fridays, all on HPR 1 at 7 p.m. Visit HawaiiPublicRadio.org for more about the exciting new lineup starting September 18th.
This is The Conversation on statewide member-supported Hawaii Public Radio. Coming up, a call for volunteers to spruce up Oahu's shoreline. But first, your quiz. In today's backyard quiz, we're thinking about a man whose name came up at the top of our show yesterday. He was born in 1916 and grew up on Kauai. After graduation from the University of Hawaii in 1941, he joined the United States Army Reserves, volunteering for active duty in July of that year. He served overseas during the Second World War as part of the much-decorated 442nd Regimental Combat Team and 100th Infantry Battalion. He was twice wounded in battle and mustered out at war's end as a captain. From there, he went to Harvard Law School, from there to Congress, as Hawaii's only congressional representative. He served as a congressman until 1976, when he defeated Patsy Mink in the Democratic Party primary race for the U.S. Senate seat left open by Hiram Fong's retirement. He served in the Senate until his death in 1990, and today we're looking for his name. Call 941-3689 or 877-941-3689 if you know the answer. First one to get it right gets our reusable tote bag that tells people you got it right.
Aloha, I'm Ainoa Naniole from Hilo, Hawaii. If you like today's music, find the playlist at The Conversation on HawaiiPublicRadio.org.
If Hawaii's shorelines are ever to be restored to anything resembling their natural state, it's probably going to have to be a grassroots effort, one parcel at a time. Tony Chance is a retired Navy senior chief, as well as the founder and CEO of Hui o Ho'ohunua, HOH-808. His organization has recently adopted Westlock Shoreline Park, hoping to restore it to its original condition and its original name, Kapapa Puhi Point. He's recruiting volunteers for a cleanup effort, and he's with us in our studio. Hi, Tony. Good to talk to you.
Thanks, Chris. It's good to be back.
This is a kind of a real labor of love for you, and has been for some time. What got you into this place?
It started after I retired from the Navy. I went back to college to get my degree, and one of the very first classes I took at Leeward Community College was Hawaiian Studies, and it changed my life forever. I saw the world differently after reading Wayfinder by Nainoa Thompson. It changed the way I look at things, the way I do things, the way I see things.
You'd seen a bit of the world before that, right, and had been exposed to a lot of different I'm assuming different cultural influences, but something really caught you about this one in particular.
I think what someone told me one time, you don't find your kuleana finds you. And that's not, I mean, that's how it happened for me. I'm just a vessel that's being used by, like most people say, it's the kopuna that are guiding me. And yes, I've been around the world twice in several, well, many countries, being in the Navy and several war zones. I've seen the worst that the world can offer, but when I came back here, I think the trauma that I felt that from the cultural trauma caused and seeing a beautiful sacred waters of Pualoa in the condition it is, I could connect through the trauma. And that's why I believe that this is why it affected me so as it did.
What is the condition it's in?
It's a lot of sacred sites that are being desecrated right now, burial sites, heiaus that are being...
In the area we know as Westlock.
That is correct, yes.
On Oahu.
That is correct. We have three fish ponds that were once working fish ponds, and they're all overgrown with the mangrove. Mm-hmm. Within the mangrove is trash, lots of trash. There's areas where it would turn your stomach almost.
Yeah.
And because it's what has been termed the pico of the Pualoa, because it's the original place of the mullet, Kaihua Pala'ai, mm-hmm. The traveling mullet that fed all of the island of Oahu. She traveled counterclockwise around the island, and that's the origin. Westlock is Kaihua Pala'ai. And Kapapapuhi Point, which kind of juts out into Kaihua Pala'ai, is known as Eel Flats, was another holy and sacred area. And so this is areas that the cultural trauma needs to stop being perpetuated, mm-hmm. and the healing needs to begin.
Whenever you get a problem of a large scale, as you say, a cultural trauma, it kind of helps to focus on a project scaled to what you can accomplish, right?
Correct.
It's easy to get with a problem that's that far-reaching to get a sense of hopelessness, isn't it?
I haven't got that yet.
No, I can tell. You know, I can tell. But that's not in your nature, don't you?
No. It's my mission statement is the impossible is where we start.
Uh-huh.
And it looks big, it looks daunting, but that's where I started. So it's going to be, again, yeah, of course. I know it's going to be challenging, but that's what I like about it.
What have you done so far?
After starting my nonprofit, I worked with Department of Fish and Wildlife, DOFA, mm-hmm. with the state at Pahala Marsh, just to get the experience of my organization to where we could feel like we could take on something like the park, the 39-acre park, mm-hmm. of Westlock Shoreline Park, Kapapapuhi Point Park, and taking on cleaning up Pualoa. So a lot of cleanups, a lot of volunteers, a lot of great people, incredible volunteers. It's been amazing. It's an amazing journey.
You really kind of created a community to do this work, didn't you?
It's a community around people where we share parallel views, and it's really neat to be around these people that share the same similar values of what things can look like. They're visionaries,
mm-hmm.
you know, and a vision is being able to see something that doesn't exist. And you're surrounded by these people, and it is amazing. Every time I'm around, these volunteers, I get so motivated. It is unbelievable.
You know, you hear stories of people who retire and just kind of stop. The wheels stop spinning quite as fast. It seems somewhat the opposite for you.
I wasn't done. The kupuna had other avenues for me, and I'm just honored and blessed to be here, to be that person. No, I wasn't ready to retire.
Evidently not. Well, Tony, what do you need? You'd like to get some people to help you on your next cleanup. What's that amount to?
Well, I need volunteers that want to make a difference in the community, and this is the place to do it. I need volunteers. Again, like every nonprofit, we need money.
Sure.
We need donations. We need people who are willing to come out. We want to do great things like where Kapuna are teaching keiki story time in the park, mm-hmm. to start teaching the young children the stories of how this place came to be. So it's amazing. So, yes, volunteers, I need money. I need people with great ideas, because that's what I'm looking for, that excitement, that magic.
Well, just looking at the cleanup itself, just in practical terms, you're going to be spending a morning on site, and this is coming up, what, a weekend after next, yeah?
Yes, on the 23rd of September. So it's a Saturday from 9 a.m. to 12 p.m., just 3 hours. I say just 3 hours, but it's amazing what people can do in 3 hours.
Sure.
Especially motivated people. And, yes, so I...
pulling up weeds, getting rid of trash.
We're going to be pulling up some weeds. There's a lot of trash. We're going to have a lot of trash bags ready. And we have a team that are looking into starting the restoration on the fish ponds themselves.
Yeah.
And so little tree trimming around the ancient burial site and some caretaking issues. And possibly some painting if there's any graffiti or anything like that exists. But just stuff that it takes to get this back to its original state.
Part of the whole project of getting your project has involved a great deal of consultation with historians and archaeologists, it sounds like.
That is correct. I do have a staff archaeologist. He's on my board of directors. And he did say he has looked around the area. And also, I have some great people, Representative Ty Cullen, Senator Mike Gabbard, council members Ram Noor and Kimberly Pine are very helpful. I mean, they're the ones that are helping me out, my champions with this project as well. And so I am surrounded. I have teachers from Mililani High School helping me, from Waipahu High School, from Kamehameha High School. I have people helping me, guide me on this journey, and it is amazing.
It's great the energy we get from other people, isn't it, Tony?
Oh, it's mind-blowing. It is.
Good talking to you.
Thank you, Chris.
Good luck on this project.
Thank you, Chris.
Tony Chance is the founder and CEO of Hui O Ho'ohonua, HOH88, seeking volunteers for a morning-long park restoration event on the 23rd of September from 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. at Westlock Shoreline Park, which he hopes will someday be named Kapapapuhi Point Park.
Support for Hawaii Public Radio comes from the National Kidney Foundation of Hawaii, whose Kidney Cars program provides funding for community health and education services. Learn more about vehicle donation at kidneyhi.org.
What are the limits on the public's right to know? The Honolulu Police Commission has its own ideas on the subject. The commission decides whether officers accused of misconduct are entitled to taxpayer-funded legal representation and does so in closed-door sessions, a practice that has generated a lawsuit from Civil Beat and the Honolulu Star-Advertiser. Reporter Dick Gruby has more in today's Civil Beat Reality Check. Hi, Nick. Thanks for talking with us.
Hi, Chris. Thanks for having me.
This is not the first time a news outlet has had some difficulty getting information from HPD or the police commission. Is that right?
That's right. Actually, both the Honolulu Police Department and the Honolulu Police Commission, which is supposed to be the civilian oversight agency that keeps tabs on the department, have a long history of secrecy.
Yeah.
And the commission's is kind of interesting. The Civil Beat Law Center, which is a separate nonprofit from ours, has already filed a lawsuit against the police commission for holding in its negotiations with former police chief Louis K. Aloha on a $250,000 retirement deal in secret.
Mm-hmm.
And now Civil Beat and the Star Advertiser have actually teamed up to challenge this longstanding practice of holding closed-door meetings when it comes to how to spend taxpayer taxpayer money for police officers who are accused of misconduct, whether it's criminal or in a lawsuit.
And yet, as constituted, the police commission is supposed to be, if not adversarial to the police department, at least somewhat separate and objective, yeah?
Well, I mean, you'd think that would be the case, but, you know, over the years, as we've reported, the commission has operated in a lot of respects as sort of an extension of the police department.
Yeah.
The meetings are held within the headquarters. The commissioners for years and years didn't really ask a lot of tough questions, at least not in public sessions. That was until two new commissioners were appointed, and that's Loretta Sheehan, a former assistant U.S. attorney, and Stephen Levinson, a former associate justice on the Supreme Court. And those two have sort of riled things up a little bit.
Well, neither one of them was at all pleased with this latest decision, right?
No. I mean, so they both have legal backgrounds. I mean, they're lawyers.
Mm-hmm.
And when they saw that the commission was trying to hold these quasi-judicial hearings behind closed doors, they thought that that was inappropriate. And in fact, Stephen Levinson was a part of the Supreme Court in 2004 when it actually ruled that these hearings are supposed to be a matter of public record.
Well, if that ruling doesn't seem to have had much impact, does it?
No, I mean, I think it raises questions. This particular situation raises questions about whether the police commission is getting good legal advice from the city's Department of Corporation Counsel, which, of course, advises all sorts of officials at the city, from the mayor on down to the city council and the police commission as well.
You know, the commission has had a reputation, fairly or not, of going back some years of being essentially almost a cheerleader for the police department. It's a membership has been a perk for supporters of the department, and that does seem to be changing, at least with a vocal minority on the commission these days.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think what you're seeing is a department that is in turmoil. I mean, it's in the midst of a federal public corruption investigation. That's really serious stuff. I mean, the police chief, the head of the organization, Louis K. Aloha, retired because he was named as a target of that investigation. And what he's been accused of doing happened on the watch of many of these police commissioners who are still there.
So you kind of wonder who's protecting whose interests after a while, don't you?
I mean, I think that question is a fair one to ask.
Well, it's one that I'm figuring you're going to keep asking, Nick. So thanks very much for taking the time this morning.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Every day we bring you a reality check from Civil Beat, today featuring reporter Nick Gruby. Birders are some of the world's most enthusiastic travelers. Their passion to observe can take them to the world's far corners, and for them, Hawaii's islands are a rich offering, enough so that an upcoming festival on the Big Island is devoted to their avocation. Rob Pacheco is an interpretive naturalist, co-founder of the Hawaii Island Festival of Birds, coming up later this month, and he's with us on the phone. Hi, Rob. Thanks for talking with us.
You're welcome. Glad to be here.
This is a lifelong enthusiasm for you, isn't it?
I've been birding since I was a little kid, yes.
Mm-hmm. And what's an interpretive naturalist? I have to ask that to start us.
Interpretation is a communication process that aims to engage people with resources. And so there's a science to it. There's an art to it. It's a profession. So a national park interpreter, if you go on a national a walk with a ranger in the national park, he's an interpreter, and he's doing interpretation. So our job is to make people love what we love.
Well, do you have much trouble doing that?
No, I think I'm pretty good at it, and Hawaii is a wonderful place to do it.
Yeah, I would think so. Birders are pretty well-traveled once they really become lifelong birders, aren't they?
Yes, they are. If they have the means, they go to the far ends of the world to see as many species as they can.
One of the things that's always fascinating about birding is that you're, and correct me if I'm wrong, but you're content just to look, not necessarily, I'm a photographer, so I feel lost unless I can bring back a photo, but that doesn't necessarily part of the birder consciousness, is it?
Not necessarily, but I tell you, it's, you know, I've had a tour company, Hawaii Forest and Trail, for 25 years, and we've seen a dramatic change. And just the birding community worldwide, just with technology. Back in the day, if you wanted to shoot birds, you were shooting with film, and it was very, very difficult. And there were very few people who were dedicated enough to and skilled enough to do it. Today, you can point and shoot and get great pictures of birds. So more and more people are shooting birds, that's for sure.
Do you think that's a growing, the birding community is a growing one?
Definitely. Yeah, there's statistics all over that show that. And there's different levels of birding. You know, there's the folks who have bird feeders in their backyard that enjoy the birds that come around. And there's just very casual birders and people who bird wherever they go. And then there's serious birders that, again, you know, spend a lot of money and a lot of planning figuring out how they're going to see birds around the world.
Well,
or chase birds that are coming through that are special in there, wherever they live.
And Hawaii offers quite a mix because, I mean, we have so many visiting birds or birds passing through non-natives that have taken root, right?
Yeah, it is. We don't have a lot of species as far as the number of species, but we've got a really unique mix in a sense that first we have our native birds, including the endemic birds, which are only found in Hawaii, which are really our jewels of our forests.
Sure.
And also some of the most endangered birds on the planet. We've had more extinctions in the Hawaiian honeycreeper group of birds than any other group of birds on the planet.
Yeah.
And so that story continues. But, yeah, we've got birds that have been introduced from all over the world, five continents, and we do have an assortment of migratory birds that come back every year, like the kolea, the Pacific golden plover.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll get, you know, unusual things that get blown around or lost and show up here periodically, like kingfishers and snowy owls and the sort.
Snowy owls, really?
Yeah.
Boy,
Very rarely. I think
he really got lost, didn't he?
He sure did.
Well, you have that whole sort of mix that makes Hawaii probably a unique destination in that way. But when people come here from abroad or overseas, are they aware of the whole extinction, the nature of extinction in Hawaii and its history that way?
Generally, no. And even a lot of birders, who are very akamai about birds in other parts of the world kind of don't have Hawaii on their map. And one of the important things that's happened just in the last year is that the American Birding Association has finally voted to include Hawaii in their region, which means that Hawaii birds count in the Hawaii birding list. And that just gives, puts more of a focus on our birds and gets that story out, because it is a story that needs to be told. And it's a world, it's an important story globally. It's an important story that, all residents should know, and it's the one that we're dedicated to telling.
I think it's probably one, I'm hoping it's one that has sunk in among Hawaii residents, but I'm a little surprised that the worldwide birding community isn't more aware of it, because it is, as you say, this is there are many, many world records set in Hawaii of the wrong kind, right?
Yeah. I don't know what that is all about, but Hawaii's like that. Even in the conservation, community, Hawaii's just now coming into its own as far as its place in the globe. We just had the Conservation Congress here from the IUCN. It was the first time it was held in the U.S. And I remember back in the 90s, hosting board members from, an international conservation organization. And they were focused on the ocean. They came here to look at the oceans, but really, the land stuff, they just weren't really aware. It wasn't on their radar that this was, something that needed to be looked at and taken care of.
I find that as strange as you do, Rob, because, there are probably few better places to study environmental degradation than Hawaii. I mean, it's lessons of all of the wrong kind, but a lot of lessons.
Oh, yeah, indeed. And so many lessons here. This is one of the best places in the world to study all sorts of aspects of science and ecology. And it Hawaii is coming into its own in that. That's definitely changing, and people are recognizing for what it is. This is a place that stands on its own against, you know, some of the great natural history locales of the world, the Galapagos, yeah. Madagascar, and, you know, all these great places, and Hawaii is right there alongside of them.
Unfortunately, some of that story is in what not to do, right?
That's true, yes.
Yeah.
We've had, it's island ecosystems are great lessons for us, because we can really see the impacts very clearly in islands.
Just because there's, as for Darwin and the Galapagos, the very fact of its being isolated and sealed off allows one to study evolution in kind of a clearer field, I would think.
It does, yeah. The isolation is just a powerful mechanism, and that's what makes, you know, Hawaii has some of the greatest, adaptive radiations and evolution in insects, plants, birds, surpassing every other place on the planet as far as what developed, you know, from something else. But it's small enough where Peter Vitusik from Stanford University talks about how Hawaii is such a great model because it's small enough where you can get a handle on it and create models, but it's complex enough that and has enough diversity and complexity that makes it applicable to other places.
It's a really terrific location for science. Rob, tell me about the birding trail. This is on Hawaii Island. This is 90 miles from one side of the island to the other. What kind of things are you going to see on that trail?
Well, the birding trail is—it's not a physical trail that, you know, you hike across. It's actually a route that is anchored on the west side by Koloko Honokohau National Park, mm-hmm. and on the east side in Hilo by Loko Waka Pond. And so it's a route that basically takes you to different habitats and resources that are already there, that are already available to the public to go experience. And just everything from seabirds to shorebirds to the introduced urban birds up through our native forest birds and grassland birds, game birds, migrants all the way across. It's able to capture, and it's not just a great place to go see birds, but it's that trip. It's a 90-mile trip right across the middle of the island through the saddles of Mauna Loa and Mauna Kea, and an incredible diversity of habitat and climate, and geography, plants, and it just showcases how wonderful our place is if you love nature.
If you can't find something to interest you on that trip, you're probably not looking very hard, are you, Rob?
That's right, yes.
Thanks very much for talking with us. Rob Pacheco is the co-founder of the Hawaii Island Festival of Birds and the Hawaii Island Bird Trail. The Hawaii Island Festival of Birds runs this Friday, September 15th, through Monday, September 18th.
Aloha, I'm Brian Guadagno from Raw Elements Certified Natural Sunscreen. You're listening to The Conversation on member-supported Hawaii Public Radio.
Today's backyard quiz reminded us of a member of what might be called Hawaii's greatest generation, a veteran of the 442nd Regimental Combat Team and 100th Infantry Battalion, who served in the Territorial Legislature, the U.S. House of Representatives, and the United States Senate. He spent his life as an advocate for peace and the rights of Japanese Americans, drafting legislation that led to the creation of the United States Institute of Peace and the Commission on Wartime Relocation and Internment of Civilians. His given first name was Masayuki, but for most of his life, he went by a childhood nickname and even had his name legally changed. He later said, "With a name like Masayuki, I couldn't have been elected dog catcher." When he died in 1990, Senator Nancy Kassebaum said, "Spark was a man who believed that reconciliation was more important than confrontation, that friendship should moderate partisanship, that reason should balance appeals to emotion. And that, of course, was his name, Senator Spark Matsunaga. And this one blew up the phone lines. I would have been very disappointed if it had not. But the winner, the first to be right with the answer, was Jeff Taylor of Honolulu. And congratulations. That's today's quiz. If you've got one for us, you can send it to TalkBack at HawaiiPublicRadio.org. The movie The Full Monty surprised a lot of people, the subject of a motley group of middle-aged men rediscovering themselves as male strippers, found and continues to find a worldwide audience. It's a stage musical now, playing at Manoa Valley Theater, and the theater's Dwight Martin is on hand to tell us more. Hi, Dwight.
Hey, Chris. How are you doing?
Pretty good. This is a first for us. We haven't had a lot of nudity on this radio show up to now, but you've got to start somewhere, don't you?
We certainly do, and I'm sure your listeners can see it all in their mind's eyes.
Well, they're going to have to be content with that, because that's all we've got. But what was the impulse to do this show?
Oh, it's just so much fun. You know, people obviously always think of the end of the show where we have the full Monty,
mm-hmm.
But it's just a delightful musical comedy with a lot of heart. You know, it's about these down-on-their-luck guys, these misfits, and they just won't stay beaten down. They come up with their own plan of how to revitalize themselves and raise their self-esteem, and it's just feel-good. It's a lot of fun. You know, it ran for 2 years on Broadway. It ran 2.5 years on national tours. It got awards and award nominations, and the comedy is just as fresh today as it was in 2000 when the show first came out.
I think, Dwight, you hit on what the source of that popularity, because it isn't necessarily based on a fascination with the phenomenon of male strippers. It's more about discovering yourself and you know, kind of making something of yourself when you've met some disadvantages. Yeah,
it truly is. It truly is. You know, at the core of the story is a gentleman who needs to come up with some money in order to pay child support and continue having visitation privileges with his 12-year-old son. That's at the core of it.
Mm-hmm.
And he comes up with this scheme and gets these other characters who used to be employed at the same steel mill where he was, and they conjure up this plan to try and come up with some money, but even more importantly, to come up with something that makes them restore their dignity and feel like they're important members of the community. So it's got great heart. On top of that, it's just hilarious.
Yeah,
it is
yeah.
So funny. Everyone has their particular story, their backstory. All the characters are well-developed, so it's interesting. And, you know, the fact that they're building up to the full Monty is it's just sort of the icing on the cake.
You know, one of the things that both the movie and the play have managed to do is take a subject that is to retain a sense of almost a sense of innocence around this subject. Yeah,
true. Yeah. You know, they these are simple people,
mm-hmm.
But they have lives like all of us have, and they want to feel good about themselves, and they want to be, you know, meaningful contributors to their communities and to their families, and you know, it's just a great group of people, and it's just a lot of fun. It really is. We have, by the way, a very special cast member, and I'll bet you couldn't guess who or what that is. That's a terrible lead-in, isn't it?
No, I'm entirely intrigued, and I'm pretty much guaranteed that I couldn't.
All right, so here it is. Our special cast member is a 2013 smart car. The story requires a car at one point.
Uh-huh.
And our technicians and designers were so challenged of how to achieve that, how to affect that, and it turns out that somehow, miraculously, our technicians fit the building around this car, and it appears on stage for a scene. So we're extremely grateful to Hawaii Smart Car Rentals for their Kukua. So we have a 2013 Smart Car in our cast.
So that's quite the coup de théâtre, Dwight. You got a car on stage. How do you get rid of it when you're done with it?
All right, we're not there yet, Chris. So I can't answer that. The technicians just got it in the building, and we're letting them have a cool off period. They had to rearrange the whole back area, as you can imagine, to roll it through the one set of doors wide enough and so forth. But anyway, it's very fun because at every performance, the audience isn't expecting it. And there's a bit of a gasp. You can hear an audible reaction when the doors open and this car comes out on stage.
Well, does that mean the next time you do Miss Saigon, you're going to have a helicopter? I mean...
You know, we're not pre-ordering any helicopters. We're not pre-ordering any chandeliers. The special effects are pretty limited in our 150-seat black box theater.
Yeah.
But we did get a car in.
Well, what happens when you go the route of spectacle, right? You have to top yourself every time, so.
Yes, I know. But you see, we can also take the counterpoint to that of revealing ourselves every time.
Okay.
So, hey, that's what we're doing in the Full Monty.
Well, that's
revealing these charming men and their delightful stories.
That's very much the whole arc of the story of this particular play.
It is, and it's interesting because so many musical comedies, require glitz and glam. It's all about that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
This one is about these guys, and their families, and they're real people. And it's so easy to connect with them. It's a comedy, but it's still so easy to connect with them. Life is so complex. Here we are all stressed out these days. We have hurricanes, and we have fires, and we have floods, and we have nuclear tension. It's so easy to be stressed, and it's so easy to feel like the underdog, like these pressures are just holding us down, and how are we going to get through it? And that's the kind of stress that these characters feel, and they figure it out. And they decide that they're going to be empowered by life and that they're going to come out on top, and they do. And the audience is cheering at the end. It's just a great metamorphosis of six down-and-out steel workers who restore their dignity and come out on top.
It sounds as if you don't have to be, well, everybody's been a little down and out and left enough to identify with this, because it really seems to have tapped into something universal with this story.
Absolutely, because, I know it's cliche, but these are real characters. You're going to connect with some characteristic in each of them. You're gonna feel that personally, because haven't we all had these kind of feelings at one time or another? Something hasn't gone right for us, or something in our lives changes, and we have to come at things, old things, from a new angle. And that's what these guys do, and very creatively, and with a lot of charm. And it's just a lot of fun. It's a great feel-good show with some great special effects and a nice surprise at the ending.
Sounds good, Dwight. Thanks very much for us. We'll look forward to that. I appreciate it. Dwight Martin is the producing director of Manoa Valley Theater, whose production of The Full Monty runs Wednesdays through Sundays until September 24th.
Support for The Conversation comes from Matson, in appreciation of HPR's local public affairs programming. Since 1882, working to support Hawaii's economy and communities. Matson.com.
There are a lot of different activities going on throughout the state. Morning Edition host and colleague Derek Malama joins us for a look at some events going on in our community that might be a little under the radar. Hi, Derek. Good to have you back.
Oh, thank you. Good to be back.
Well, so we're going to where? Hawaii Island today for a hula festival?
That's right. It's a hula festival for seniors. The 35th annual Hawaii Kupuna Hula Festival will be at the Sheraton Kona Resorts Convention Center tomorrow, 18 Halau. are taking part this year from Hawaii, Japan, Okinawa, and California. Performances begin at 5 on both Wednesday and Thursday. Tickets are $15 for each night, and there's also a craft fair from 8 a.m. to 4 on both days. This is happening at the Sheraton Kona Resort beginning tomorrow.
Halau from all over.
Yes.
And you can put down your video console and play a classic game of strategy tomorrow. It doesn't require, doesn't even have to be plugged in.
No, no. Can you believe that?
Yeah, I know.
It is Chess Wednesday at the Kapolei Public Library tomorrow. Chess sets are provided. You can learn how to play, or you can play around with a friend. And this takes place in the young adult area tomorrow from 5 to 7 p.m. at the Kapolei Library. And this is free as well. This is free.
And the whole family gets a chance to learn about space tomorrow in Waimea on Hawaii Island.
The Thelma Parker Library hosts Astro Bash. There will be a hands-on space experiments, face painting. They do that a lot in space, from what I understand. Also, a planetarium, talk with scientists, games, and more. The Astro Bash is tomorrow from 4:30 to 7:30 in the Thelma Parker Library. And this is free.
Better get ready for space travel. It's coming.
Yes, it is.
Thanks very much, Derek.
You're welcome.
Derek Malama joins the conversation to take a closer look at events in our community going on under the radar. You can always find out more on our website, hawaiipublicradio.org.
I listen to Hawaii Public Radio for the news, because it brings us closer to the world around us. Couldn't begin my day or end my day without knowing what's happening in the world. And being here in the middle of the Pacific, it's comforting to know that there is the world out there and that we can hear all their news.
Member supported Hawaii Public Radio. Radio with vision. Listen and see.
And that's it for today. Up tomorrow, views on rail from an urban planning perspective. We'd like to hear from you. You can call our talkback line and leave us your comments at this number, 808-792-8217. Email is talkback at hawaiipublicradio.org. Post comments on Facebook at The Conversation or tweet us at HI Conversation. If you missed any of this show or want a past one, find them on The Conversation page with links to more information about guests and topics. Just look under talk shows for The Conversation on hawaiipublicradio.org. I'm Chris Vandergoot. Join us tomorrow.